On today's edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, Josh and I catch up on some news that we've missed over the last week, and we break down what to expect from the Nets coaching search. All that and more coming up on Locked On Nets.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back into another edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. I am your host, Josh Bass. Joining me as always, Marcus Barahal. We are still in quarantine, but things are, I guess, maybe looking up. There is some activity, some news to talking about. I know for myself at least, getting a bit more accustomed to life inside with no face-to-face interaction, but I always enjoy hearing the sweet melodic tones of Marcus Barahal. Marcus, how you doing?
I'm good, Josh. You know, still quarantined, like you said, just kind of trying to get through it all. It seems like some stuff is starting to happen. There will be some Korean baseball on TV later tonight. Very riveting, exciting. Hopefully, NBA basketball is not too far away.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'm real jazzed up for the Korean baseball. Of course, we have the Jordan doc that we have been watching. Saw episodes 5 and 6 last night, but only 2 more weeks of that, and then that's over. So I don't know why they haven't done they didn't do 10 standalone episodes for that and make it 10 weeks instead of 5.
Yeah, I think I saw something that they were initially going to air it like on the off days between the NBA finals, so like those like 1 or 2 days between games 1 and 2 and 2 and 3 and whatnot, and they obviously like changed everything once the season was suspended and whatnot. They pushed up the release date. So I think they were kind of just like they didn't really have a plan. But yeah, it would have been cool if it was like longer, if there was more.
Right. I mean, yeah. Also, like when you think about it, each episode in itself is like it's pretty much a standalone. Obviously, there's a common thread woven, but they're all pretty dense, so it's not like they want to put two together just to make it kind of worth the content, because they all kind of stand up on their own.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely. And a lot of the times, like the episodes that they show back to back aren't necessarily like super tied together. Like obviously there's like the whole like thread of the story that's continuing, but it's not like the episodes even that aired just last night, episodes 5 and 6, like first one was mostly about like the Dream Team, and then the second one was like there was some Sun stuff and like kind of leading up into like the 93 season. So they were like sort of related because they were like back to back, and obviously it was like a lot of the same people and the same team and whatnot, but it wasn't two episodes that like needed to be put together, I guess.
For sure. And while we're on the line, Trevor Plouffe, definitely former, I'm not sure about current, MLB player, says that he's hearing from multiple sources that July 1st will be opening day. So we'll see how legit this is, but it could be just a parallel that the NBA might be on the horizon in a similar time frame.
Yeah, I mean, that's what everyone's kind of been saying, is that it'll be like late June, early July, sometime around there, maybe like July 4th, that area. And I mean, like, we're used to having a ton of news around that time because that's usually free agency. So like NBA people probably didn't have like vacations planned or whatnot for anything in that time. Like they didn't have anything else going on. I think people were going to be focused on the NBA around that time. So hopefully things are able to come back in some capacity. I've seen also, I'm curious about your take on this, Josh. Some people saying that like they would possibly condense the playoffs to like 12 teams as opposed to 16, which would in theory knock out the Nets, who were the 7 seed in the Eastern Conference, if they did like 6 teams from each conference. Would you be upset about that? I feel like I definitely would be, but I don't know. Obviously, like I'll take what I can get as just like an NBA fan at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I think for me, I would be a little upset because it gives, for sure, it kicks in, it's out, and you know, hey, maybe if there was 16 teams, Kyrie and KD would have a chance to return, at least when you look at the timelines, regardless if that ends up happening or not, they at least have a chance to make some noise with those guys, because whenever you have two top tier players like that, you have a chance. At the same time, it is a bit cheap because if COVID hadn't happened, neither of them would be back, and the Nets would have easily gotten destroyed in the first round. So I have mixed feelings about it. My thing is with the 12 teams, though, it's the same number of rounds if you had 16 teams. So why wouldn't you just make the 16 the first round and best of five? And I get it. You have four more teams in. That's just increased number of people and variables. But if it's the same number of rounds, like I feel like you either have to go 16 or like 8. 12 is kind of whatever.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I the only thing I could think of is that it'd be less people. But I feel like once you reach a certain number of people, it's probably like negligible. Like the fact that they would have like 16 teams versus 12 teams, like I don't think, what is that? That's like 60 fewer players and then like coaches and teams and whatnot. So it's definitely like a difference. But if you're up at 12 teams already, you're having hundreds of people involved in this thing. So yeah, I totally agree with that point.
Yep, yep. The one thing that we know is for certain is that we'll have Built Bars with us. They have been a tasty treat for me. My favorite new protein bar that I've been able to eat in quarantine. It is made for a great snack when really thinking about your meals is one of the few things that we actually have these days. But Marcus, let's get into the reason why we're here. It's to recap all the news. We're going to be talking about the Nets coaching search and some of the information that Mark Stein had tweeted about who the Nets are kind of seriously considering as of now and who their list is. We'll be ranking those options. We'll be getting down into brass tacks on Spencer Dinwiddie, reportedly playing for the Nigerian national team in the Olympics next year, which I'm pretty excited about. And then also the KD and Draymond continued beef, just one thing that we really can never get away from.
Yeah, the Mark Stein tweet, to just start there, like that kind of came out of nowhere, I feel like, just because obviously like he tweeted it on April 23rd. So the season had been suspended for like a month and a half at that point. So I don't know why like news was coming out now, because then he followed it up by saying that like the team was going to take its time and they want to wait until either like the regular season or playoffs or if nothing comes back, like some decision is made in that respect before they actually name a head coach, because I guess it would be weird if you like named a new head coach and then they announced the season's back and then like that head coach has to like kind of scramble and try to figure out what to do for like a possible playoff run. So I definitely agree that they should wait until a decision is made, but I was like a little bit confused as to like what prompted this news to be tweeted out now.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's like Mark Stein's board or what the deal is, but yeah, I think it just throws a complete wrench in the timing thing. Obviously, if the Nets end up going with like Jacques Vaughn, having him kind of be like reiterate that he's going to be the guy moving forward. If the season does come back, that could be a nice rallying cry there and really get the players to play for him even harder. But besides that, yeah, it just doesn't make any sense from a timing perspective to throw these names out there now. And the Nets aren't going to be doing a ton of diligence in the meantime. But what do you think of these candidates, though? And just to recap, it's Ty Lue, Jason Kidd, Mark Jackson, Jeff Van Gundy, and, of course, the interim coach, Jacques Vaughn.
Yeah, and Stein also, I saw a follow-up tweet after the fact. He said that Mike Brown was also in consideration or, like, just a name to watch, but wasn't in that, like, initial tweet. Brown coached KD and Kyrie in the past with the Cavs and the Warriors, so definitely interesting there. But in terms of the five main guys, it seems like, I think I prefer Ty Lue most out of this group because of his relationship with Kyrie. He's the only coach out of these five to have actually won a championship, which he did in his first season coaching Kyrie, coaching LeBron, who, while he's a different personality from KD, obviously on the same, if not very similar, talent levels and just two guys who are massive, massive stars. So Ty Lue has like kind of shown that he can coach guys with huge egos. He can get a team to kind of blend and play together, and he can do it at the highest level in the NBA Finals. And I know people have kind of questioned his actual coaching acumen, and then like once those guys did leave and he, in a very small sample, was 0-6 with the Cavs before they eventually fired him, people have kind of like questioned his X's and O's. But I kind of feel like when you have this level of like star talent, it's kind of rare to need that much. Like they don't need a ton. They just kind of need someone who can hold them together, who can kind of motivate them, which I think Ty Lue could do, and who could like occasionally drop an out of bounds play or contribute like a general scheme. But I think like most of it's going to come down to the players. Like, I don't know if you agree with that, Josh, but I kind of think that coaches don't play a huge role outside of like a couple great ones and a couple terrible ones.
I want to tell you about a new sponsor on the Lockdown podcast. It's our friends over at Built Bar. Built Bar, the, in my opinion, best tasting protein bar there is on the market. They were nice enough to send us samples and really kind of a free pack of protein bars to myself, Marcus, Gavin, all the Lockdown hosts. And, you know, they were saying, oh, it's going to taste like a candy bar. And I've heard enough of these over the years where I have some pretty big semblance of doubt when it comes to these protein bars and how good they taste. Built Bar blew me away. It has 16 amazing flavors, 8 kind of chocolate nut flavors, 8 are more free of those. Yeah, some orange in there, some other more fruit-based flavors, which are really good. They're covered in 100% chocolate, very soft, easy to chew. You're not chewing on a rock, which has been a problem for me in the past. They're healthy. That's important. You know, 20 grams of protein, 170 calories for their peanut butter brownie bar. That's a pretty good deal to me. I am on the go a lot. Are in a lot of meetings and calls, need something quick, don't have time to make myself something. I'm always eating protein bars, and Built Bar is a new great solution for me. I am so excited to add these into my daily routine. Love the mint brownie one also. They really know what they're doing on the flavor side. Marcus, how are you finding your Built Bars?
Oh, they're incredible. The peanut butter brownie one was my favorite. Also, the salted caramel chocolate one was really good. Yeah, just like having it after a workout. Very quick, very easy, and I can just kind of go on with my day after that.
Yep. So go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get $10 off your first order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. They got some new flavors hitting the markets in the coming weeks that I am very excited about, particularly the coconut pecan pie and blueberry lemon. I am very, very excited for that, Marcus. You have no idea. It's going to be divine if Built Bar keeps up what they've been doing on some of the other flavors I've had. Again, go to BuiltBar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON for $10 off. BuiltBar.com. Yeah, I agree with that somewhat. I think the X's and O's part really, really becomes less important as, or it just is able to add less value kind of the as you go later on into the season, into the playoffs. So I think an X's and O's coach can be great oftentimes for a team that doesn't have the talent really to mask a lot of deficiencies. But when you're getting into the conference finals and finals, it's like we all know how it is. It's just basically ISO ball and guys taking turns.
Yeah, and then another thing that I'm just remembering with Ty Lue, like from that title season, was that in that series against the Warriors, like I know Kevin Love was like kind of hurt and that played a part in it, but he went with Richard Jefferson a lot, which I think shows like a lot of courage to play a guy who was definitely way past his prime, a guy who maybe like you probably like if Richard Jefferson gets a ton of minutes and plays poorly, you're going to get killed. But if like Kevin Love plays a ton of minutes and plays poorly, you're not going to get killed and Kevin Love is going to take a lot of the blame. So I think that that was like a very gutsy decision and one that worked out and like made sense with the matchup to kind of go smaller. So I like that he was able to do like that kind of adjustment. And granted, like I said, it was partially because of Love's injury, but just like the fact that he showed that level when I think a lot of guys would kind of just like defer at least tells me that like not only is he managing players' egos, but he's not afraid to like make a move that might upset people.
Yeah, I feel like I think he's definitely not the biggest X's and O's guy, but I think he is relatively adaptable. And that's super.
Yeah.
Because we saw with a guy like Lionel Hollins when he coached the Nets, he was stubborn as a mule and also a horrible X's and O's coach, which is terrible, terrible combo because you're not relinquishing that power at all. And you're just kind of putting these ideas in the atmosphere that don't work at all and don't have the flexibility to adapt. So I like Ty in that respect. And I think if a coach, you know, if they understand what their weaknesses are, they build their staff around that, then that's can be even more valuable than having a guy at the top who's really good at everything. Just being able to have more specialization, I think, is really important. And I feel like Ty Lue's tenure with the Cavs, when he won the championship and Blatt had gotten fired, I feel like he was kind of looked at as just like, he's just the guy, the figurehead. It's basically LeBron. Like, Ty Lue's not even the real coach. They don't respect him. But I feel like his tenure has been looked at more fondly in the years since. Do you agree with
yeah.
that?
Yeah, I do. I think that, yeah. I remember at the time, like, it didn't really make sense. And, like, even the fact that he took over midseason means that he probably didn't have time to, like, implement a bunch of his own stuff. But just, like, I don't know. I was impressed by his adaptability, which I don't think was, like, really noticed in the moment.
Again, I don't even – that's the thing with, like, when you have a LeBron-led team.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but at the same time, like, I don't know what kind of system would be, like, implementable with the current team. And, like, we never got to see Kenny Atkinson coach KD, but, like, I don't know really, like, what kind of style Durant wants to play either. Because, like, in OKC, it was very ISO-heavy. Then with the Warriors, it was a lot of ball movement. But then it kind of, like, got blended with, like, I think the ISO that he, like, more naturally wants to play. And in, like, the conversation with Draymond Green that we're going to talk about later, like, there was definitely friction in terms of, like, what their actual style was going to be. And I think that that might have happened again if Kenny had been able to coach KD.
Yeah, no, for sure. And yeah, I think it's so tough to implement your system when you don't have the credibility to star players. And I think Kenny Atkinson, we love him, but he just didn't have the credibility. Am I saying it's the right move? No, but depending on some of these other names that we'll talk about, I think could have kept Kenny Atkinson and came out a hell of a lot better. But I think there could be some room for improvement, because ultimately the most important thing is the credibility that the coach has with the Nets star players. And if Kenny didn't have that, he was never going to regain it. So I think that's something to keep in mind. And I like that Ty Lue has gotten experience with the Clippers this year, coaching guys like Kawhi and Paul George. So he has now different types of star players that he has coached in addition to LeBron. And also, you have to take this into account, that he's been able to coach a team that has two stars, but also really, really good role players that are kind of a notch below all-star level in Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell. And that's pretty similar to what he'd be dealing with here when you look at this current roster in guys like Dinwiddie and Caris LeVert.
Yeah, and with those guys, like, specifically, like, they had to come off the bench a lot of the time, which is going to wind up happening with some of these Nets guys, assuming everyone's, like, back and healthy next year. Because if you have Kyrie and LeVert and Dinwiddie and Jared Allen and DJ and then, like, Durant and Joe Harris and Torian Prince, like, if no one gets traded, which I think is still a possibility, but if this, like, roster comes back and is fully healthy, a lot of these guys are going to see their minutes decline, see their touches and their opportunities decline. And you definitely need, like, a player's coach or, like, someone who can communicate that and can kind of make sure everyone is still, like, locked in and together as a team. And I think Doc Rivers gets a lot of credit for that with that Clippers team. And Ty Lue has been able to kind of watch him and learn from him the last couple of years. So, yeah, I think he would be my top choice out of this group. Although, to your point, I don't love Ty Lue. I more so just, like, the other four guys don't spark a lot in me. But is there one that jumps out to you as someone that you would maybe prefer instead of Ty Lue?
No, he's my top choice from this group. I think there's a couple other candidates that are okay, and then yeah. It really evolves after that.
So that's going to do it for this edition of the Locked On Nets podcast. Josh and I will be back tomorrow to continue talking about the Nets coaching search, and we'll be back in your ears then. If you want more Locked On podcast content in the meantime, be sure to listen to Chad Ford's NBA Big Board for some more great stuff. And until tomorrow, be well. Bye.